the defeat of the superpowers and the invading Saddam couldn't achieve any of his pre-planned goals of invading Iran. Iran turned into a role model for other Islamic nations who seek freedom and justice. While Western hired political analysts keep prophesizing the Islamic revolution's imminent collapse, this great phenomena of the 20th century continues advancing towards its lofty goals under the leadership of Imam Khomeini's successor, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. Imam Khomeini's progressive and freedom inducing ideas have transcended borders and have captured hearts and minds, even in Washington and London.
The Islamic Revolution's victory under the unique leadership of Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, had a number of ideals. These were justice and freedom, freedom from tyranny. These ideals were not restricted to Islamic countries. And, for example, we have seen throughout the world people being inspired by the Islamic Revolution in Iran to rise up against tyranny. For example, we have seen that in South Africa in recent years under the leadership of Nelson Mandela, and Nelson Mandela himself personally acknowledged a debt to Iran's Islamic Revolution. He was inspired as well by Iran's Islamic Revolution. We have seen this in many countries. And Imam Khomeini, of course, said Iran's Islamic Revolution was an explosion of light. And he opened the way for struggle against all excessive demands of the big powers, particularly the United States. And the Imam Khomeini taught us to be steadfast and persevere in the way of Allah and in the way of truth. We will never forget Imam Khomeini's heritage and legacy.
God's mercy upon his soul. Yes, Iran's Islamic Revolution triumphed with the presence of whole Iranian nation from all walks of life. Yet, women played a very outstanding and effective role in this regard. Before the revolution, the Western view on women was dominant in Iran, and the Shah regime had done its best to fight all human values in women to turn them into the tool of implementing the American and European goals in the country. The instrumental look on women had begun since the 19th century and reached Iran in early 20th century, but it reached its climax in 1970s with the growth of materialistic thoughts and technological and cinematic progress. Thus, secularism spread all over the country. The thought deemed no value for religion in society and politics and limited it to individual life. Europe and the United States were introduced as the examples of so-called progress and ideal life, and religion was introduced as the enemy of modernism and progress. So I think we have to go live to Press TV headquarters, where our colleagues at Press TV headquarters are speaking. About this celebration marking the 43rd anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution of Iran. Let's take a listen.
Since you are basically based there, tell me the effect that you think that the revolution have had, if any, on various African countries and African movements?
Well, I have to go back to the history. The before Islamic victory of Islamic revolution in Iran, there was an axis of evil consisting of three countries. It was the Shah of Iran, it was the Israel, and it was South African apartheid system. These three, they had very close relationships, and they were training each other's, even torturers. The torturers of Sawak in Iran was trained by South African police, and the South African torturers has been trained by the Israelis. They had a very close relationships. Iran had were enjoying a very close financial agreement with South Africa. The main exporter of oil to South Africa was Iran. Well, when Imam Khomeini was in Neuffel-le-Château in Paris, a journalist from South Africa who died 2 years ago out of corona, unfortunately, his name was Farouk, he asked him about his stand if he become victorious after the Islamic Revolution. And Imam Khomeini immediately said, I will cut my relationship with South Africa and we will stop exportation of oil to South Africa. That exactly happened 30 days after the victory of Islamic Revolution. In Isfand, sometime it happened about 30 days after the victory of Islamic Revolution. The embassy of South Africa in Iran was closed, and the biggest supporter of apartheid was lost. I had talking to a lot of icons of struggles in South Africa. I actually produced a documentary called Muslim Friends of Mandela, and I had spoken to everyone. Most of them were saying we were losing our hope against apartheid, that we will not be victorious against this vicious regime. But when we realized that the Iranian people managed to topple a 2,500 years rooted tree from their country, definitely we will be also able to get rid of the apartheid state which was ruling in South Africa. On 1994, that happened. 1979, Iran managed to get rid of the first part of this triangle, and South African in 1994 has managed to remove the second line of this triangle, and now the Palestinian are geared to remove all access of this evil and the last apartheid on the land. On the earth is going to be removed by the removal of the apartheid regime in Palestine.
Let me introduce my next guest with me this half hour, political commentator Hamid Reza Ghulamzadeh. Thank you so much for being with us. Hamid Reza, your perspective, I mean, 43 years, I can tell you, since I'm old enough to remember the beginning of the revolution, that during that time it was like, it's not going to last, it's not going to last. Of course, that was coming from the Western media continuously. What's key in your perspective to the longevity of this revolution?
Thank you very much for having me, and I would like to congratulate you, Dr. Hosseini, a good friend of mine, and all the freedom thinkers and freedom seekers in the world for this anniversary. You know, the most important thing, I have lived 40 years of this revolution, and I have experienced, as you said, I witnessed the war, I witnessed the all the economic sanctions and difficulties, all the hostilities against Iran, and all these problems that were made for Iran. All these years, and the reason what I can see in these years is that the reason that Iran has succeeded so far is to become a real true sovereign country. Before that, as Dr. Hosseini just said, Iran was a regime which was a puppet regime actually to the Westerners, and it was controlled mainly by the Americans and the British and the others. Just remember the during the World War, when the three leaders of those Western countries came to Iran without informing the Shah of the country, and they decided everything here, and then they left the country. So that time it was not a real country. It had a lot of fortunes. It had a lot of natural resources, a lot of income, a lot of weaponry and such things, but it lacked being a legitimate country. And by that, we can now see, for example, the Arab countries in Persian Gulf, where they have a lot of weapons and they are incapable of using them. They are incapable of providing their people with correct, let's say, welfare or correct identity as a country, and they are fighting against Yemen brutally a war which was supposed to end 3 weeks, in 3 weeks, and it has lost for years. And actually, the situation is vice versa. The Yemenis have an upper hand. So having wealth, having weapons, having the biggest and the strongest army in the region does not make a country a real country, a sovereign state. What did that was it was the, what the Islamic Revolution and Imam Khomeini actually gave to the was a correct policy, the sovereign policy and independent policy from the other wards and from other schools of thought. We all remember, and it is a slogan, that neither West, neither East, only the Islamic Republic of Iran was the idea and the motto of Iranians. And Iran has said that, okay, I'm neither a communist based on that time, I'm neither liberalist, and I'm introducing a new form of governing. And it has succeeded. Why? Because it has been able and successful in lasting for decades of most brutal sanctions, most crippling sanctions and difficulties, most hostile policies from all around the world, a war in which most of the countries helped Saddam, and only a couple of countries helped Iran after years. Mm-hmm. And it was the longest war in the century. So all these things is because Iran actually acquired a unique policy, acquired to be independent and sovereign, to stand on its own feet. So because of that, that power of the country came from the people, truly from the people, because from the day one, the revolution won because of the people, and after that, people came to the scene. Always we see that people are on the scene. Right today, as you were just saying before the, opening the program, that if it was not because of the COVID situation, only people, I would be on the streets right now, not in front of the camera. And right. Many people right now are on the streets.
Stay with me. You talked about the nation is on the street. I want to look, as everyone is looking on their screens, they can see actually these images coming from those cities that are actually not in the red zones, or some perhaps that are. They are. We see the ones, some of them have the cars, but in a place like Ahwaz in the southern part of the country that you're looking at right now, people have turned out in mass and, of course, showing their support for the revolution and chanting slogans. And in general, it's always a very, very happy day. And there you're seeing images. This is from Qom. These are various cities now that are in the red zone of the coronavirus, unfortunately. So what the government has said is that people, if they want to show up, they should do so with their cars and on motorcycles because of making sure the health protocols are definitely being met. Again, you're looking at live images. This out of Bandar Abbas now, where also it is a car convoy today. But still, people out there and showing their support of this revolution 43 years later. Well, stay with me. We're going to take a short break, and I'll be right back.
When the Iranian Islamic Revolution took place in 1979, prominent Nigerian Islamic cleric Sheikh Ibrahim Al-Zazaki was a young university student preaching against immorality. He says that the 1979 Islamic Revolution in Iran and the leader of the revolution, Imam Khomeini, were sources of inspiration to many young Nigerians.
It makes us, you know, it boosts our morale, and it makes us feel that what we have been yearning and aspiring is realizable. It's possible since it has been realized elsewhere. You know, the success of the revolution was a turning point in modern history.
Professor Sadiq Abba was also a young student who cared about the common good for all Nigerians and said that the Islamic Revolution was based on knowledge and the collective willpower on the Iranian people.
The Iranian revolution is a revolution that sprang up to address global injustice, global inequalities, and global socioeconomic exploitation and expropriations by the Western world.
Dr. Imam Mukhtar says the 1979 Islamic Revolution was a change that was inspired by Iranians who have had enough.
It was a unique revolution that was led and driven by individuals, groups, young people and all the like, who saw a frustration with the system, which was with the Shah regime, which was not only pro-West, but then subduing the people within the domestic environment. And it was a collective responsibility.
Experts believe that one of the significant outcomes of the 1979 Islamic Revolution was turning Iran into a power in the Middle East region with even influence in global affairs. Anjum Abdullahi, Press TV, Abuja.
Well, viewers, you're looking at live images once again coming from across the country. Again, for those who can and are not in what are called red zones here in Iran, dealing with the coronavirus, you will see them on foot and the traditional way of actually celebrating this day. And for those in other cities that happen to be in what is called the red zones here in Iran, you will see them in really with automobile convoys today or on motorcycles. For example, what you're looking at right now is Ahvaz in the southern part of the country. And fortunately for them, they are not in the red zone, and people have come out in mass once again. As I said earlier, 43 years on. We're going to continue our discussion with my two guests this morning. Sayed Hosseini here with me in the studio and Hamid Reza Ghulamzadeh here in Tehran. Sayed Hosseini, back we were talking a little bit about Africa, being that you're based basically in various parts of the continent. When we look at, you talked about the influence of the revolution in the early days. What about today? What about the effect of the revolution, if any, that it can have on movements in Africa today? How significant is that? And is there something that movements, whether Islamic or not, in Africa can learn from this revolution and
well,
Islamic Republic?
The African people, they find themselves in harmony with the aim and objectives of the Islamic Revolution. And especially with the teachings of Ahlul Bayt school of thought, with the kinds of the message which is coming from Karbala, with the martyrdom of people like Joan, Mawla Awazar in the day of Ashura, and also the anti-apartheid message that Iran sends to the whole world, and the unconditional support that Iran had and has against the last apartheid on the earth, which is Palestine, they find themselves to be in harmony with the aim and objectives. That's why you find the normal African people as a supporter of Islamic Revolution. And whenever I have been invited in South Africa to talk, or whoever they know that I am from Iran, as soon as they hear the word Iran, it seems that they are welcoming, and it seems
isn't
that
it a normal affinity actually for the people of Africa to have with a movement or a revolution that was done in the name of supporting the Mustazafin, the oppressed?
Exactly, especially when we are coming from South Africa, where the apartheid regime was using church against the black entity. There were churches in South Africa which blacks were not allowed to come in. It was called Inkhia Kirk, which there was a special church for blacks and a special church for whites, the same way that there was special buses for blacks and for whites, and special schools and hospitals. So they were facing really a vicious regime, which the example of the today can be found in Palestine. So that's why, whenever we talk about the struggle against a type of discrimination, they find themselves to be in harmony. That's why we see that a person like Ibrahim Zakzaki, who has been in Nigeria, his message is welcomed by millions of people, and today something like 16, 15 million people is following him in that part of Africa. And the same is with everywhere. If this message managed to go to any part in Africa, you will find a lot of people who is support. I faced people whom they called Khomeini. Their name is Khomeini. Mm-hmm. When I asked them for what reason, why you have chosen this name, it says, that time that I was born, it was Islamic Revolution in Iran was happening, and my father was a fan of Islamic Revolution, so he put my name as Khomeini. I personally know about 10-15 Khomeinis in South Africa, in Zambia, in Zimbabwe, and a lot of people has called themselves Ayatollah, a lot of people called themselves Ruhollah. That is because it was a trend that time they find Imam Khomeini. Even a man like Obama, I mean, in his memories, says that I was a 17 years old boy, and there was this man whom his eyes was catching me, and I was really under influence of such a great personality. So I grown up in that time, and then later on he become president. I'm not saying he was a supporter, but what I'm saying, even a man like Obama in his book says that he was inspired. So so many people across Africa, across the African continent, whenever they listen to me and my conversations concerning Iran and revolution, they are surprised. I have got a personal encounter with Nelson Mandela. Mm-hmm. When it comes to Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, I met him once, and then as soon as he saw my garb and my religious clothes, he asked me, tell me about Khomeini. And I thought, what I must say that for Mandela it makes sense. So I said to him, Mr. President, Ayatollah Khomeini was also like you in jail for 26 years. He said, I read his biography. Never it's written that he was in jail. I said, let me explain. He was in exile for 15 years in Iraq. The family says that he didn't, first of all, went out of this town even once. And in this town, he used to go to the shrine of Imam Hussein, to the place that he was teaching and his home. He never go to anywhere else. That is jail. And then I told him that when he came and he became leader of Islamic Revolution, he was living in a very small house, that I advised him to go and see how small is that house. And his daughter was saying that during his stay of about 12 years, he never go out of this small house in that 12 years. Only once, when he had an heart operation, he has been taken out of that place. And maximum, he has been just at the beginning of Ali to cast his vote and come back. That was another jail for him. So the final sentence that Nelson Mandela was saying, that one of my ambitions was to meet this man, but unfortunately he was released before me. Mm-hmm. That is really the effect of this man in the entire Africa.
Very interesting. Well, Hamid Reza, I want to talk to you about a little different side of the story. Said Hosseini just talked about Africa and influence. I want to talk about the influence on younger people, the generations that were not around before. You know, the average age now here in Iran is 32. This revolution is 43 years old. So many, many people who live in this country have not even witnessed this revolution. What does it take to keep this revolution alive with them? Because we have seen many of them being very, very active, whether we're talking about those who we see who have gone to various places defending Islam, or simply in participation of various religious events and ceremonies. Your take.
You well know that we have been suffering from the sanctions for years, and the economy in the country is not that good right now. But it doesn't mean that the people don't have welfare that the amount that they deserve. But the people realize that this is not because of the Islamic revolution. It is actually because of the sanctions and because of the hostilities, and those hostilities are because Iran is making them independent. How? You can realize that in the role that people play in this country. Let's compare Iran and the United States, which claims to be the epitome of the liberalism, democracy, and so, those claims that the Americans say. In Iran, you can participate in the elections, and you can choose your the president with direct vote. And it is insisted that you should have a say. You as the nation, you as the normal citizens of the city, the country, can have it. You should have a say to say. Here, the leaders and the politicians encourage people to take part in the elections. And you can see on the other side of the world, in the United States, the Electoral College was admittedly picked up and designed to deprive the normal people to have a say in the country, in the future of the country and the politics. They said the Electoral College is used to allow the elites to choose the president. You have gerrymandering to not allow the people to be able to participate in the elections. You have all these things to prevent people from participating. And here you have all the services and all the things to encourage people to take part in the election. And taking part in the elections and political events means that you have a say. You have a role in the future of your country. So you can see that we have had very different presidents or very different parliaments sitting in different years. For example, the current administration, the current government is totally different from in terms of policy from the previous one, from the one before that, and the last that. So this means that people can have a say. And that is what people understand, that they can make a change. And the country is going forward slowly, but based on what they are making and what they are doing. On the other side, they can see that in terms of infrastructures and the sciences and those things that are very important in long term, the country is moving very well. Like, for example, the defense capabilities is something that all the Iranians are proud of. Just remember the scenes of the attack on the Ain al-Asad air base 2 years ago. Or just recently we had a war game here in Iran in which a simulation was done, and it was done so precisely that it was astonishing, actually. So people are proud of that. People are seeing that how successful Iran has been in sciences like, for example, nano or stem cells and such things, which can help people in their health, in their life in the future. And they are modern, actually, sciences in the world. So Iran has become one of the top five, top 10, or even in some cases, some top three countries in some of those areas. We are seeing the way Iranians are handling the COVID situation in the country. At the very beginning, we were deprived of being able to even buy the kits, not the vaccines. Even the testing kits were actually prevented to come to Iran. And after that, we killed them. They did not sell vaccines to us, despite paying all the expenses in cash to the WHO and those mechanisms that they created, but they did not give us. So Iran moved forward for creating the vaccine, and they succeeded. And so Iran is one of the very few countries that has been successful in creating a vaccine and has been more successful in actually vaccinating the people. And in that term, it is another sign. You are seeing the United States, I guess it is about 50-something percent vaccinated, fully vaccinated people, despite being the first country to begin vaccinating its people, because people cannot trust the government. Here, people trust the government. And when the leader says that I have actually received all three doses of the vaccine, and advise the people to do that. Many people go on the lines to receive the vaccine. When the people, when the administration says that the vaccine is helpful and it is safe and you need to take that, many people go and take. And you can see that the number and the percentage of the vaccination here is much higher in than many countries. I was talking to some diplomats from the European countries just a couple of weeks ago. And they were actually very sorrowful for the situation in their own countries because people do not trust the government to take the vaccine. And they are now we are witnessing, unfortunately, thousands of deaths or contracts in the countries because of the COVID. So this connection between the administration and the nation, the state and the nation, is the point about the Islamic Revolution, Islamic Republic. You can see this close connection between these two, and you cannot actually separate them from each other. You cannot say that you have a elite level, which are the politicians, and you have common people who are very distracted from each other.
So it's one. You're basically saying the people and the government is basically one entity.
Exactly.
Okay, and on that note, stay with me.
As the leader has said, power comes from people.
Okay, stay with me. Thank you so much for those comments. We'll be back in just a bit with more of this session. As you can see, though, those live images still rolling in from various cities across the country today. What is called the 22nd of Bahman on the Iranian calendar, or February the 11th, of course, the anniversary of the Islamic Revolution right here in Iran. Stay with us right here at Press TV. I'll be right back.
43 years have passed since Imam Khomeini, whose charisma remains a sacred trait for many.
Welcome back. This is the live coverage of the 43rd anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution of Iran at IRIB English Radio. I'm Atef Erfani. I'm here with my colleague.
I'm Ehran Derakhshande, and we can see larger and larger crowds and motorcades turning out in many Iranian towns and cities throughout the length and breadth of this land. Huge crowds have turned out in all major Iranian cities, including Tehran, Isfahan, Shiraz,
Qom,
Hamadan, Ahwaz. There's huge crowds in Ahwaz as well. And we are expecting a keynote speech from Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi in about, we think, about an hour and a half from now, or possibly 2 hours from now.
At Tehran's Musalla in the speech.
That's right, in Imam Khomeini's Musalla. Roughly about 1.5 hours or 2 hours from now.
Yes, and hundreds of journalists and reporters have gathered at Tehran's Azadi Square in order to cover these celebrations and these marches, marking the 43rd anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution of Iran. But for your information, due to the restrictions regarding the coronavirus pandemic, these marches are being held inside the cars or on motorcycles.
That's right. And we've got huge motorcades and huge convoys of cars in many Iranian cities taking part in this year's celebrations.
I just was watching the videos, people inside the cars and on motorcycles waving the flag of the Islamic Republic of Iran and celebrating this victory. I think we have to go back to Press
TV
headquarters.
Let's go live to Press TV headquarters for their coverage.
The very first revolution that started with the people, continued with the people, did not change its word, did not change its way, did not decrease or increase its goals, is the Islamic Revolution of Iran. Ayatollah Khamenei.
Okay, let's go live now to Press TV headquarters in Tehran, where journalist, Press TV journalist Marzia Hashemi is talking to Sayed Hosseini, the director of the Islamic Center here in Tehran. Let's listen in.
Policies of Islam. So even that time, those people which they were keeping slaves, they became one of the enemies of the Prophet. To that extent that they were laughing to each other, says, now I am equal to my slave. And even they adding women, so I am equal to my woman. Out of surprise, while the message of Islam, right at the beginning, it was very clear and loud that we are anti-apartheid. So this message has been true during century. All blacks of Africa and all blacks of all parts of the world, they were finding themselves in harmony. A man like Malcolm X has realized this and become Muslim. A lot of people in the name of Nations of Islam in United States of America has realized, come to realization of this, and they become Muslims. And Islam, according to a lot of reports which is coming from all over the world, is the fastest growing religion in the world, just because one of the ethnic groups which are coming to Islam is blacks from all over the world, is because of the anti-apartheid policies and anti-apartheid teachings of Islam. So the same is with the Palestine and the Israel that we have as a living apartheid, which fortunately two things happen. The Human Rights Commission has actually announced the Israeli regime as an apartheid state, which now we have to start dealing with this regime like what we were dealing with apartheid in South Africa. And the second thing happened to African Union last week. The Zionist regime has been expelled from the African Union because I think they have granted the apartheid regime in Israel as a type of
observer status.
Status, mm-hmm. But that also has been removed. So two great defeats has been imposed to the Israelis, and hopefully by this year, we are going to witness the last kicks of this dying horse called Israel. And according to a lot of predictions, according to a lot of analyzations of the biblical predictions and also political analyzers and the also economical and social and political analyzers, this year is going to be the last year for the apartheid regime in Israel.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being with us this morning, Said Hosseini, director of the mosque in Africa.
Johannesburg, yes.
Yes, thank you so much.
It was a pleasure.
For being with us. Viewers, you're looking at live images now coming from across the Islamic Republic of Iran this morning as celebrations continue. And usually what takes place, I mean, early in the morning it starts, and usually it reaches its peak around noon. What we usually see here in Tehran, I can tell you, it usually climaxes at the epicenter, which is Freedom Square, and we usually have a speech by the president. And of course, we still will have a speech by the president this morning. Of course, as I said earlier, the situation is a little bit different this year because of COVID restrictions in some of the cities that Iran has coded by color, and those that are in the red zones actually cannot have a rally in a regular sense of the word. But we see in the other cities the rallies that people are walking, like this one coming from Isfahan. And in the other cities that are red, like Tehran, you will see the car convoys. And we're continuing our discussions here this morning. I'd like to welcome my next guest to this panel, Professor Hakima Birya, from the University of Tehran, and political analysts. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me here.
Let me start off, because we have seen throughout this 43 years the continual anti-PR against Iran, especially when it comes to the status of women in Iran. And it is actually quite remarkable for those of us who have information about the advances of women that have taken place since the revolution. I wonder if you could touch on that a bit.
Sure. Let me just put that in context. And let me begin by saying that Iran under the Pahlavi regime was actually a client of the United States. And that means that there was a hybrid system of interference in Iranian affairs during the time of the Shah. And the United States used various clientcy tools, including the cultural tools that it had, in order to have control over this client country that was supposed to actually be a protector of U.S. interests in the region and put all its resources towards that. And the Islamic Revolution was not just a revolution against the tyranny of a monarch. It was not just against the monarchy of the Pahlavi regime, but it was actually against the tyranny of the United States also. So Iran, with the Islamic Revolution, under the leadership of Imam Khomeini and with the wholehearted support of the people, came out of that client relationship with the United States and started a systematic independence process from the United States. And when that happens, the United States starts a hybrid system of hostility against that country. So the red line for the U.S. system has historically been systematic independence of other countries. And that has been documented in various studies, including in a book by Professor Silvan and Professor Majewski. The book is called U.S. Foreign Policy in Perspective. The two professors study U.S. Relations with the rest of the world, with other countries, over the past 100 years, and they come to the conclusion that the United States has the goal of creating an empire of client states. And when a country comes out of that relationship and starts a systematic independence process, then that country is labeled as an enemy by the United States. And as I said, a hybrid system of hostility is activated. And, of course, one aspect of that hostility is propaganda. When I say hybrid, it means there are economic tools, as you see in terms of sanctions. There are military tools, as we have seen with the United States' instigation of Saddam Hussein to actually have a military attack on Iran and support of that war throughout 8 years. And, of course, there has been propaganda from the very beginning. So the United States is not concerned about the Iranian people in general, and, of course, is not concerned about Iranian women in particular. So the question is, why does the United States spend so much money giving to different people who are well-known, hundreds of thousands of dollars yearly to actually come up with projects to influence Iranian women, and first of all, put forth this image that Iranian women are in need of saviorship, and then, in a sense, say that the United States is the savior. And of course, as you said, the status of women in the West is not at all positive. Is not at all something that is that can be put as a role model. You know, everyone knows what the status of women is in the West, and of course in the United States, as you can see in the various movements that are there regarding the status of women. So, as I said, this is a very much political project. It is part of a hybrid system of hostility against a country that has basically gone out of that client relationship. And not only has it gone out of that client relationship itself, it has started a process that wants to rid the region of the dominance of the United States. And that is the true concern. And of course, as you said, women have had a big role in this Islamic revolution. So if you look at that, you see that even in some cities, we had women at the forefront of the demonstrations in the final year of the revolution, including, for example, the example of Mashhad. Women, if you look at the pictures of the demonstrations, you see women with young babies in their hands coming to the demonstrations day after day, facing the bullets of the army of the Shah. What gave them that resilience and that power was the Islamic identity that Imam Khomeini actually gave them, the movement of Imam Khomeini. It gave an Islamic identity to women that gave them agency, gave them the power to resist all the pressures that were there at the time of the Shah to actually push women towards an un-Islamic identity. As I said, the cultural interference of the United States in Iran was immense, and women were part of that picture. So the Islamic Revolution basically made that process go in the opposite direction, giving the women an identity that gave them agency, that gave them resilience, that gave them the power to resist and become part of the process of ridding this country from the tyranny of American dominance.
All right, thank you so much. Stay with me, Professor Bedia, joining me here this morning as Press TV continues its rolling coverage of the activities across the country and festivities taking place in the Islamic Republic of Iran this morning. We're continually showing you images from various cities. And, of course, there are various officials that are walking in the crowd in those cities that actually they are able to have the walking rallies. And then in the other cities, of course, we continue to see more and more people turn out on the streets this morning in their cars and on their motorcycles. We're going to continue our coverage. Stay with us. And we're going to take a quick break, and I'll be right back.
While Iran is marking the anniversary of its 1979 revolution, which over...
This is Bahman, the month which reminds us of love and empathy.
Bafizi, 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 Ey Shahidon Rah Khuda, Ey Karde, Bahre Ehyay Haq Jan Fada, Kas Qatre, Qatre Khun Pak Shoma, Mi Ruya.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
January 5th, 2022.
Another point is that sometimes experts and specialists who are from among the people suggest ideas and solutions to the officials for different sectors. Officials should come up with a mechanism in order to be able to benefit better from these ideas. And this will actually help people to participate in the decisions of the responsible organizations of the country. This is one point. In addition, in order to benefit from the capabilities that are available in the people in practice, they should come up with another mechanism so that they can help the people participate in action as well. There are many individuals who are willing to help the administration in part of its work. They should make it clear how the people can become linked with a particular area in the administration. They should sit and think about this. This requires thinking, research, and other such things. Officials should also use the people's capabilities for supervision. There are cases of corruption and favoritism in some parts of the country. These may be hidden from the eyes of the authorities in charge, but the people see these. Therefore, they must use this capability of the people in this regard as well. Therefore, being from the people and being among the people are fundamental tasks. And government officials should pursue this in the way that has been briefly explained here. Overall, in return for the recommendations that we make to our dear people, the esteemed officials of the country should also consider themselves obliged to truly work with all their might.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Of course, what I see today is that thankfully the esteemed officials, from the top to the bottom, are working and struggling hard. As far as I see, they are trying and going through much trouble. I hope their efforts will be blessed by God. They must continue these efforts, work for the people, and purify their intentions for God. In this case, their efforts will be a great act of worship. I ask God the Exalted to make the Iranian nation successful in all areas and fields, to help it defeat its enemies, to gladden the pure soul of our magnanimous Imam, to associate him with the friends of God, and to make him satisfied and pleased with us, so that we will not feel embarrassed before our magnanimous Imam. I hope that he will make the pure souls of the martyrs satisfied with us, to raise them with his friends, and to not make us ashamed before them. I once more send my greetings to the dear people of Qum and to you, honourable participants, in this meeting, and I hope that God will bestow His grace, mercy and blessings on all of you. May God's greetings, mercy and blessings be upon you.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We go live to Press TV headquarters, where our colleagues at Press TV headquarters are covering the event marking the 43rd anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution of Iran. And here we have Press TV reporter Yusuf Jalali with us.
From various entities, when they talk about manipulation by the Iranian people, that, as a matter of fact, the Iranian people are very, very independent-minded. Thank you so much, Yusuf. And, of course, we'll be crossing back over to you as needed. And viewers, you're looking at split images there. And, of course, that is Freedom Square. Freedom Square, of course, the symbol of the revolution, one of the main symbols during that time, and that stood out to symbolize the revolution and the freedom-seeking people of Iran and what they did 43 years ago. We're going to continue our discussion here this morning. Let me cross back over to Hamid Reza Ghulamzadeh before I say goodbye to you. I don't want to take too much more of your time. But your final words, what would you say is key now for the future of the Islamic Revolution and Republic in Iran?
As I discussed earlier, the change that the Islamic Revolution made to Iran is to provide the country with the essence and the true essence of power, which is power. It has empowered the people. It has empowered the people and takes its power from the people.